Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Good Shifter by Philippa Norcross and Michael Anderley, narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Chapter 1. Maggie's eyes cracked open to see the slimy brown spots on the water-damaged ceiling tile, and she sighed and closed her eyes again.
5 more minutes, please.
But she heard Pharaoh coming down the hallway. That must have been what had woken her up. She forced herself upright on the sagging couch. Another spring had broken overnight, if the ache in her back was anything to go by. She was rubbing an especially sore spot when the key turned in the lock and Pharaoh came in.
Morning, Maggie.
She hung her coat on the hooks by the door and scuffed her boots on the mat.
Sleep well?
Maggie opened her mouth to protest, to say she'd just gotten in herself, but realized there wasn't much point. If nothing else, the fact that her shoes and coat were dry as bones would have given it away. But Pharaoh knew her too well anyway.
Not really, she replied. This couch isn't exactly a feather bed.
You could go back to your apartment, Pharaoh pointed out,
selecting a tea bag from the cupboard chock full of them while the water heated.
You have a bed there, I believe.
Maggie made a vague, noncommittal noise and stretched. A few vertebrae popped in protest.
I was beat last night, she said. Even 5 blocks felt like too far.
Mm-hmm.
The Naga didn't sound convinced, and Maggie couldn't blame her. Pharaoh had seen how well Maggie was coping with Matt being gone in the months since it had happened, which was, to put it lightly, not well.
Have you eaten anything?
No,
Maggie stood.
Color me shocked, Pharaoh said.
Go get something from Blake's. Smelled like cinnamon buns were coming out of the oven when I walked by.
Maybe.
She walked over to the window and pulled the curtains aside, letting in the grayish light of what purported to be 8:30 a.m. on a misty March morning.
Might just get coffee.
Pharaoh poured boiling water into her mug, which read, I'm a secretary, not a magician, but I understand your confusion. And the scent of peppermint filled the air.
Caffeine's not a bad idea.
She shuffled papers on her desk, one-handed.
Got a call from a prospective client yesterday. James Shulton. You know him?
Maggie shook her head.
Well, neither did I, so I did some digging. Tugged on the grapevine a bit, you know.
No response. Pharaoh pursed her lips and went on.
Turns out he's a vampire.
Huh, vampire. Don't see many of those.
Pharaoh sipped her tea. Maggie was in a bad way today if she didn't respond to a new client being a vampire. They weren't exactly common, and they tended to do their own dirty work. For a vampire to be looking to hire a private investigator? Normally, that would have had Maggie's detective senses tingling. And Matt would have. Well.
No, you don't, Pharaoh agreed. Which is why, in my humble opinion, it would be wise to take his call.
I'll think about it.
Maggie finally stepped away from the window.
Leave his number on my desk.
You can only think about it for so long,
Pharaoh pointed out.
We're already being hounded for the utility bill. It's just as well they can't cut us off or we'd have frozen through February.
Maggie pulled her heavy woolen peacoat on, turned the collar up, then hunched her shoulders at Pharaoh's words, sighed, and left the office. It wasn't quite as bad out as it had looked from the second floor. It was gray and foggy, sure, but that was about the worst of it. Granted, that didn't mean the tiny center courtyard all the first-floor shops opened onto was any more appealing than usual. With its heavily weathered benches, at some point in the 90s they'd been yellow, or so she'd heard, and chipped concrete planters where plants went to die. The people who frequented the courtyard, though, were anything but dreary. Everyone who worked in this building had some form of magic, or was related to someone who did, and it made for a lively atmosphere. Maggie sometimes wondered if the frequently misty weather was a side effect of sorts, or a facet of the veil. Weird things happened around magic and magical people. Strange, right? For many, many years, almost as far back as the history books went, the magical and non-magical had lived apart, separated by barriers both magical and mundane. That way no one got burned at the stake anymore, or got a stake driven through their heart. Unnecessarily. Some magical folks preferred to live among the non-magical on their own, which was fine. There had always been plenty of magical communities, big and small, and Joseph's Landing was one of them. The little neighborhood consisted of a few city blocks and included a couple of apartment buildings, such as the one she lived in and the one she worked in, and an elementary school, among other things. It had been bought up by one of the old, well-established magical families a few decades ago, after a rather unfortunate incident involving a kindergartner's powers manifesting without warning in the middle of a grocery store. The kid had ended up a pyromancy master. On that day, in June 1973, they'd almost become a casualty of their temper tantrum, alongside the entirety of the supermarket and the adjoining optometrist's office. So now, thanks to the nice little curtain of magic between Joseph's Landing and the rest of the city, there hadn't been any more unintentional cases of grade school arson since the 70s. All the magical families sent their kids to Merlin Buxton Elementary, not named after the legendary wizard, although he was the school mascot. Between that and the abundance of people in the know in the community, any child manifesting powers had plenty of support. The scent of fresh bread and cinnamon pulled her from her musings, and she realized she was in front of Blake's. Pharaoh was right. The cinnamon buns were still steaming in the display case, and it looked like the stout little baker was setting a dozen fresh poppy seed bagels on a tray. She was briefly tempted. Poppy seed bagels happened to be one of her favorites. But as with most of her feelings these days, it passed quickly, and she opted instead for the persnickety vending machine tucked into an alcove on the square's west side. As she fumbled in her coat pocket for enough change to get a bottle of iced coffee, she heard scuffing footsteps behind her. She turned to see one of the kids that lived in the apartments on the upper floors of her building. Helena Chatham was 6 and a half years old. Her favorite things in the whole world? Unicorns and playing in dirt. Hey, Helena. She slotted quarters into the machine. Off to school?
Hi, Miss St. Clair.
The little girl hiked her backpack up on her shoulders.
Yeah.
Helena didn't look up at her, instead keeping her eyes on the ground. Her light brown hair was falling out of its usual braid, and one of her shoes had come untied. The bottle clunked into the pickup slot, and Maggie grabbed it.
You seem down, kiddo. Everything all right?
Helena shrugged, raincoat rustling.
I don't know, miss.
She kicked a pebble.
It's my turn for show and tell today. Everybody's been showing off their new magic, doing tricks and stuff, and I don't have anything.
Aw, that's too bad.
Maggie crouched to meet Helena's eyes.
It took a while for my magic to show up, too. I remember wondering why everybody got their magic first. It wasn't very fun.
She wasn't lying. It hadn't been fun at all. What had made it even worse was that Matt's had shown up first. She'd been in a snit for months. It had made their 7th birthday party quite an ordeal.
Nuh-uh, Helena said. I'm boring. I don't want to be a normal.
She looked up, and Maggie saw her lower lip was quivering the tiniest bit. She also had a mark of dirt on her chin. If this kid didn't grow up to be some sort of garden witch, Maggie would eat her hat. Maggie smiled. You're not boring. Your magic's still growing, that's all. Don't worry. I know your mom and dad, and the chances of you not having any magic? Well, they're pretty slim. She slipped her hand into the inside pocket of her coat and drew out a little charm shaped like a 7-pointed star. How about you take this for show and tell? She set it on one point in the palm of her hand, where it balanced, swaying back and forth slightly. She flicked it, and it spun, sending off brilliant rays of light in every color of the rainbow. It also gave off a very faint sound of wind chimes. Helena laughed, mesmerized.
It's beautiful. What is it?
It's my good luck charm. Maggie closed her hand around it and offered it to the little girl. One of them, anyway. A lightning fairy gave it to me a long time ago. Helena grinned and opened her hand, palm up. Maggie deposited the charm into it, and it quickly disappeared into her pocket.
Thank you, Miss St. Clair, she exclaimed happily. I'll bring it right back after school.
Maggie stood. Sounds like a plan, she said. Now you get on or you'll be late.
Thank you again,
Helena called as she ran off. Maggie sighed, her bleak mood returning in full force as she made her way back to the office. It was all well and good to soothe a child's worries, to tell them that yes, their magical powers would manifest sooner or later. They'd get their share of the useful mystical skills that blessed the magical subset of the population. There weren't many magic users who didn't appreciate their abilities, although she could think of a few. As a matter of fact, she'd been coming down on that end of things herself lately. Her magic had been unruly as of late, or maybe a better word was weird or new. In any case, it was unsettling, and she both didn't like and didn't know what to do with it. Everyone knew that new magic didn't develop in adulthood. What you got when you were a kid was what you got. Which meant she had to be going crazy, because while she'd always been perceptive, this was getting a bit absurd. She could smell the coffee through the sealed glass bottle. She'd heard Pharaoh coming that morning before the Naga had reached the stairs. Last night, she'd smelled the pizza delivery girl from halfway down the block, and the aroma of double pepperoni and mushroom certainly hadn't been coming on the utterly non-existent wind. She cracked open the bottle of coffee as she reached the second floor landing. Pharaoh was talking to someone, presumably on the phone, which was odd, too. They'd specifically soundproofed the office for client confidentiality. Sure enough, she hung up as Maggie opened the door.
Ah,
Pharaoh said with a bright, no, a satisfied smile.
That was James Shalton again. He was quite insistent upon using our services.
The smile turned into a grin.
I let him know that you'd be along presently. Don't forget your notebook.
Pharaoh tossed Maggie her keys, and Maggie caught them one-handed.
Pharaoh, she started, exasperated. You can't accept a client. I can, and I have, she said firmly. What are you going to do, fire me?
Maggie huffed and walked back out the door, only to turn on her heel, stick her keys in her pocket, and snag her notebook off her desk, before leaving a second time, letting the door snap shut on Pharaoh's fanged smile.
Chapter 2. At least there's no way I could miss this place,
Maggie dryly muttered as she turned her Civic up the drive to Shalton's mansion. It was way out in the country, on several acres of old-growth forest and a provincial reserve. A beautiful wooden fence that couldn't cost less than $100 a foot ringed the whole thing. Was that how you priced fences? She didn't know. The drive was cut stone, the trees rather perfectly trimmed for old growth, and the entire effect was one of old money. Richesse, largesse, pick your adjective. Shalton was clearly loaded. The house was no different. It was massive, but not in the way of McMansions. It had character. Gabled windows, more crown molding than you could shake a stick at. And was that a tower in the back? She'd certainly believe it was a vampire's abode. The trees were thick enough, for one. He'd only have to wear sunscreen to get from the door to his car, which was a truck. A Ford Ranger. What the hell? She parked behind the spotless white, perfectly detailed vehicle, got out, and headed for the doors, locking the Civic behind her. There was a bell pull.
The bell would summon a butler, she was sure. That worthy would usher her into a sitting room, and the lord of the manor would sweep down his grand staircase in his long black cloak, and he'd have the thickest Romanian accent you'd ever heard.
Miss St. Clair?
A voice straight out of the deep south drawled as the door opened. The man in front of her couldn't have been further from her imagination. 6'2", short brown hair, a beard that needed a trim. His clothes were designer, of that much she was sure, but the dusty work jeans, worn-in button-down shirt, and a belt buckle bigger than her cell phone still screamed, Naid? Yahood? Cowboy?
Yeah, that's me.
She cleared her throat and started again. Maggie St. Clair, Great Lakes Investigations, I'm here to see James Shelton.
At your service,
the man said with a slow grin. Perfect teeth. Fangs, naturally. Vampires gave her the creeps.
Come on in. I'm about to have lunch. Would you care to join me?
Sure, thank you. That's very kind.
Maggie followed him in. She'd never had a prospective client invite her to eat at the first meeting. She hadn't eaten breakfast, though, and she was hungry. The inside of the house was a weird mix of the house's original architecture and perfectly modern furniture. The room he brought her to had a 50-inch TV mounted on the wall, and a whole shelf of Dallas Cowboys paraphernalia. It looked like a bunch of it was autographed, too. She hadn't bothered reading Pharaoh's notes on Shelton, and she was beginning to regret not doing so. Was he actually from Texas? The accent seemed a little too strong for that, if she was honest. It made her think more Georgia or one of the Carolinas. Reading people had always been her forte. It drove Matt crazy. He'd nicknamed her Holmes, and only half in fond sibling love. She'd give just about anything to hear him say it again and roll his eyes at her.
Mighty nice to meet you, Miss St. Clair.
Shelton brought in a pair of tall tumblers brimming with tea.
Thank you for taking on my case. Lunch will be ready in 2 shakes. Sit, and let's chat while it's all set out.
She sat on the leather couch and accepted the glass. He sat across from her, leaned back, and took a long drink. His shirt cuff pulled back to reveal what she was pretty sure was a Patek Philippe.
I'm afraid my secretary didn't forward any details about your case, she said. Only that you wanted to speak to me? What exactly do you hope to hire me for?
Well.
He set the tumbler on the coffee table, which was quite possibly mahogany, and looked at her a little more seriously.
I'm hoping you can find my son.
She raised an eyebrow. Go on.
Few years back, I met a lady, name of Cyrilla.
He sat back again, throwing his arms up on the back of the couch.
Fell for her straight away. Gorgeous she was. Legs from here to Houston. Hair black as night, you know the drill. And her eyes.
He got lost in his memory for a moment.
Anyway, I reckon looking back, that she put a spell on me.
This time, both of Maggie's eyebrows went up. You mean a love spell?
Uh-huh. Her hair wasn't the only thing black about her, if you take my meaning.
I do, she grimaced.
Black magic was never fun to deal with on a case. Someone who didn't have any compunctions about using magic to override someone's will, someone's soul. She couldn't say she liked James Shelton much. The southern charm was a touch on the creepy side. But Cyrilla sounded even worse.
Well, it was a whirlwind few months, he continued with the faintest smirk. In the end, she left me. Broke my damn heart.
Maggie bit down on the your achy breaky heart that sprang to her lips and let him continue.
Swanned off into the sunset after telling me she couldn't do it anymore. It was her, not me. all that bullshit. Looking back, I never did see her shed a tear. I was too busy bawling my eyes out, begging for her to stay. God, I was a fool. A few months later, I ran into her at one of those big parties, the kind where you make business deals over bruschetta, that sort of thing. There she was, all on her lonesome, and 5 months pregnant, if she was a day. Gave me a look, too. You know the kind. One of them, look here, James, see what you're missing looks. Seen enough of them over my time. I figure she knew I'd be there, and she wanted me to see her. Why? I'm not sure.
A short man in a three-piece suit appeared in the living room doorway.
Mr. Charlton, sir. Lunch is served.
The English butler stereotype shattered as he spoke in a strong New Jersey accent. Charlton sat up.
Thanks much, Nick.
The butler bowed and left, and James picked up and drained his tumbler before standing. He came over and offered her his arm.
May I?
He was the picture of a southern gentleman. In cowboy boots, she saw now, a pair that looked like they'd cost a fortune. Hardly a surprise. She took his proffered arm, and they made their way into the dining room. This room was far more in keeping with the old Georgian style of the house, although the place settings were modern. Charlton drew out a chair for her, and she sat. Then he took his position at the head of the table. Moments later, two young men in three-piece suits came out of what was presumably the kitchen and set plates in front of them. The first course was a caprese salad. He tucked in, she followed suit, and he began to talk again.
Couple weeks after that, my old grandmother came for a visit down from New England way. She saw my long face, twisted the whole story out of me, and announced that she wasn't a whit surprised. Fair knocked me flat on my ass with that one. Gran went on to tell me that there's been magic in the Charlton line for as long as could be tracked back. Not as strong as some, mind you, but not nothing either. She had a touch, my pa had a touch, and now looked like I did too. I told her she was crazy. I'd never been able to do so much as pull a rabbit out of a hat. She said that didn't surprise her either. Said that if you don't get your magic when you're a kid, you never do. But it's still in the blood, still in the soul. I thought she'd lost it. But then she told me about love spells, and, well, that explained it all. She also said that Cirilla might have tracked me down because I had a little bit of magic. Trying to have a kid with magic on both sides of the family, but she hadn't been interested in sticking around.
The same two young men delivered the main course of steak cooked rare, fresh-boiled potatoes, and garden beans.
Gran also put a new spin on finding her at the party. Said I might have accidentally tracked her down myself, thanks to the bit of magic in my blood. Something about being drawn to my kin. The baby, in other words. I told her I wanted to find her, and I wanted to find my kid. She said, looking at me down her nose over her glasses like America's Eagle herself, that no way, no how was I going to be able to take on a sorceress all by my lonesome. I'd sooner get myself turned into wallpaper paste. Well, I wasn't about to throw in the towel. Not a chance of me giving up on finding her or the baby. So I dove right in. Started asking around, finding out everything I could about the magical world, making friends, building a new network. Same as business when you get down to it. If you know the right people, you find out what you need to find out. I found out through the rumor mill that Cirilla had given birth to a son. My son.
He stabbed a potato with more force than was strictly necessary.
I wanted so bad to find them both, but I still didn't have any way of taking her on. No way of beating her and getting my kith and kin back where he belonged instead of with that black magic,
Which?
He glanced at Maggie, who kept her face neutral. She'd heard far worse in the course of her work.
So I made a deal. Might not have been the best deal, but it was the one available to me at the time. And as my pa always said, you gotta rope the steer that runs by you, not the one in the next field over. I'd do it again if I had to.
He was quiet for a moment. The only sounds in the dining room were the click and clink of cutlery and quiet chewing. Maggie watched him surreptitiously. Vampires were rare enough that she'd need to brush up on her lore before hopping into this, if she took the case to begin with. Didn't they only need blood to survive? Was he getting anything from this meal, or was it only for show?
The short of it is that I got myself turned into a vampire.
He polished off his steak.
The long of it is that in return, I was an indentured servant.
You mean a slave? Maggie frowned. He'd chosen to be turned? That wasn't usually how the stories went.
Said what I said.
Shalton didn't meet her eyes.
Indentured servant. I did my time in any case, and now I'm out. Got my own back, and now that I have money and power, I want my son.
That's where I come in, she said. You don't know where he is anymore.
Bang on, miss. Been a while, so I've lost track of him. Need someone of your expertise and experience to put me back on the right path.
The look in his eyes shifted from hard determination to imploring.
Please, he said. I just want my son.
Chapter 3.
Are you sure I can't get you to stay for coffee?
Shalton wheedled.
Nick makes damn fine lattes, and I know it's a bit of a drive back.
I really do appreciate the offer, Maggie said for what felt like the 100th time. I have to get back to the office. Maybe another time?
Aha! So you will take my case, he said triumphantly.
I'll think about it, she repeated, kicking herself for the slip. Damn social niceties. I haven't got quite as much time on my hands these days as I used to, doing everything on my own.
I heard about that.
Shalton frowned sympathetically.
Horrible accident. I can't imagine how hard it must be for you losing your brother. They say it's even harder for twins. I'm sorry.
The car skids and fishtails as Matt hits the patch of black ice. He's a good driver, though. He knows how to handle winter driving conditions. For some reason, he turns the wheel, and the car begins to spin, end on end, dangerous in the best of situations, but in the middle of the night in a high-speed chase. All she saw was the flash of blinding light. The RCMP told her later it had been a semi. It had killed Matt on impact. And it was the next thing to miraculous that it hadn't killed her, too. She blinked the after images of the semi's headlights and the spinning moonlit prairie landscape from her vision, feeling queasy. For a moment, nothing felt real. She felt like she was looking down on herself or Shalton. She felt like she wasn't really there. The pain had been excruciating, even if it had been quick, and she was glad she didn't feel anything like that anymore. She shook herself. She hadn't ever felt anything like that, and she didn't want to imagine it. Thank you, she said woodenly. It's hard, but you take it day by day. The acceptable platitudes were like reciting poetry in high school, bland, monotone, and meaningless. He leaned on the frame of the open front door.
I can't imagine, he repeated, shaking his head. You have a good day now, Miss St. Clair, and do think about taking me up on the case and the coffee.
Her smile of farewell was brittle, and she chewed on her bottom lip all the way back to town. Shalton set her teeth on edge. He was too nice, and the story was too good,
Not simple enough to be an obvious fake, but not convoluted enough either.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?